This is a little bit different this morning, this class, than what I might normally teach in a gospel meeting or in a special effort, but we're asked to talk about grief, and my prayer is that the things that we say today will be helpful to you in some way. There's probably somebody in this room this morning who, when you learned that we were going to talk about grief, you weren't sure if you wanted to be here. And some of the things that we're going to say will be difficult perhaps to hear. And I promise you, I will do a seminar like this about 14 times this year. And every time, it's difficult because it brings back, of course, wonderful memories that are happy, but it also brings back a lot of pain in my heart and in my life. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in just a moment. The book is on the table. The book is free. If we run out of them, we'll send you some more. If you have some people you'd like to receive one, if you'd write down your name and address, we'll send them directly to you, and you can get them to others. So this lesson is entitled, Some Things That I Wish Everybody Knew About Grief. I want to preface what I'm going to say by the fact that there's probably not anything that I'm going to say, if you are involved with grief in your life, or if you have had grief in your life, I'm probably not going to say something that you don't already know. We're not trying to reinvent the wheel here, and I don't believe that there's a lot of necessarily new information about the process of grief and about the facts of grief. The question is, how do we handle it? And I wish everybody understood. I mean, people even who haven't dealt with grief in a very close way, I wish everybody could understand the things that we're going to talk about today. So number one, and I want to mention up front, there will not be a lot of scriptures because a lot of this is practical in nature, but we're going to begin with a couple of scriptures. And the first thing that I would like for everybody to know is that grief is not sinful. It is not a sin to grieve. Well, why would we even say that? Here's why we would say that, because there are people who will look down on you if they think you're not grieving the correct way, or if they think that you're grieving too much. And I've even heard people say, well, if you grieve, then that must mean you do not trust God. Well, that is just a lie. That is not true. Grief is not sinful, and there are three passages of Scripture that come to my mind that I think will help us understand this. The first one is John 11, verse 35. You know what that verse says. You've quoted that verse in your life, even if you didn't know the reference, because it's the shortest verse in the Bible. And it only says two words. And I don't think the Bible, the writers of Scripture, and even those who brought about the compilation of the Scriptures, I believe that was under the work of God in some way. I don't believe that they did anything incidentally. It wasn't anything done by happenstance. Everything that was done with purpose. And so it's not coincidental that the shortest verse of the Bible tells us that Jesus wept. And if Jesus wept and grief is sinful, then Jesus must have sinned. But the fact is, we all know that Jesus never sinned. He never committed a sin. He never did anything wrong. And so if Jesus wept, then grief must not be sinful. But what is perhaps more important even than that statement is the statement that's found in John 11, verse 36. You're familiar with John 11, 35, but you may not know what John 11, 36 says. John 11, 36 says that when the Jews saw him weeping, and I'm kind of paraphrasing this a little bit, when the Jews saw him weeping, they said, now watch this, look how much he loved him. Look how much he loved him. The point of this statement in my mind is that there is a direct correlation between the depth of our grief and how much we care about somebody. There's a direct correlation. Well, what does that mean? Well, I was over in Ethiopia for 2 weeks last fall, teaching in a school of preaching there, and we studied every day with a group of 25 young men who were studying to be preachers, and we studied from 8:30 to 4:30 every day. We studied the book of Revelation. It was an in-depth, intense study. And during the course of that week, one of those young men's father passed away, and he had to leave the school And before he left, the students gathered around him and the faculty, and they had a prayer for him, and they sang some songs with him, and they prayed that God would bless him during this time of grief, and that God would bless him. He had to make about a 10-hour journey to get to where his family was located. Now, I was very touched by the fact that they were showing their concern and their care for him. But I had never met this young man before, and I certainly didn't know his father. And while I was touched by that, there was not what I would call deep grief in my heart because of that loss. Now, if we are human beings and we are Christians, we will be touched in some way anytime there's death. Because death is called the enemy of the Christian. And so we will have we will sorrow and grieve. But compared to the grief that I would have when I lost my mother and I lost my father, compared to the grief that I would have when I lost my best friend in high school, compared to the grief that I had when I lost my wife, that grief is very, very minimal. And so we say again that the amount of grief that we experience is in direct correlation to the amount of love that we had for the person. And when they saw Jesus weeping, they said, look how much he loved him. Why do we grieve? Because we love people. When we lose people, we grieve because we love them. So grief is not sinful. The second passage is 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, Paul, it appears, is answering some questions that Christians in the church in Thessaloniki had about life in general and about being a Christian. And there must have been something that came up about death and about eternity. And so Paul gets to 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, and he says, as if he is answering a question, I do not want you to sorrow, or some Bibles say grieve, like others who have no hope. Now notice, Paul did not say, I do not want you to grieve, period. He did not say, I don't want you to sorrow, period. I do not want you to grieve or sorrow like other people who have no hope. So the Holy Spirit seems to indicate that it is okay to grieve, but you grieve in a different way if you're a child of God. You grieve in a different way if the person that you've lost is a child of God. We don't sorrow like people who have no hope in the world. People who are without Christ, according to Ephesians chapter 2, verse 11 and 12, are without hope. They're without hope in this world. But if we are children of God, and if the people that we lose are children of God, then our grief will be different. So grief in and of itself is not sinful. And then the last passage is 2 Corinthians chapter 1. In 2 Corinthians chapter 1, Paul, again, perhaps is answering some questions from the Christians in the church at Corinth. And in this passage, he's going to talk about, in verse 2, the God of mercies. And when you come to verse 3, he says, the God of all comfort. The God that we serve is the God of all comfort. Now watch what Paul says. He is the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all of our afflictions, so that we may be able to take the comfort that we've received and bring comfort to others. The God of all comfort, who comforts us in all of our afflictions. Notice that little three-letter word all. That little three-letter word all comes from a Greek word. The word is pas. It's pronounced pas. It's spelled P-A-S in the English language, another three-letter word. And you know what that Greek word means? It means all. Okay? It means God is the God of all comfort. Now think about this. If the Bible says that God is the God of all comfort, what that means is that if there is any comfort in this world, then it ultimately goes back to God. If there's any comfort. Even if people are not Christians, if they don't claim to be Christians, if they don't worship God, if they don't live their lives for God, if they receive any comfort, it may not be the same kind of comfort that Paul is writing about to the Thessalonians, but if they receive any comfort, ultimately that comfort comes from God, because he is the God of all comfort. And secondly, he comforts us in all of our afflictions. Whatever afflictions you have in your life, whatever afflictions you're dealing with right now, today, whatever pain you have, whatever heartache you have, whether it's a result of death or illness, and we're going to say more about this in a moment, any afflictions, any pain, any heartache you have in your life, God can bring you comfort. And then Paul takes this a step further, and he says that God is the God of all comfort, and he comforts us in all of our afflictions. And then he gives the reason. Why does God do that? So that we can comfort others with the same comfort with which we have been comforted. That's an amazing statement. God brings comfort to us so that we can help bring comfort to other people. And this then becomes the duty, as it were, the obligation of every child of God, every person in the church, to help bring comfort to somebody who is in affliction. And if you've ever been the recipient of comfort, you must also be a dispenser of comfort. If you've ever been given comfort, at any time in your life, when you've dealt with an affliction, you should be giving comfort. One of the reasons that we do these seminars about 13 or 14 times every year for the past 5 years is because we've been comforted so much by so many people. We don't do these seminars because we think we're going to give you any earth-shattering new kind of information, but it's what we hear most often is, I'm just glad to know that I'm not the only one who feels that way. Or I'm just glad to know I'm not the only one who's dealing with that. And my guess is there's somebody who is in this room today who is dealing with some pain and some grief in your heart and in your life that you never imagined that you would have to deal with. And my prayer is that what we say today will bring some amount of comfort to you. It comes ultimately from the God of all comfort. Number two, grief is never the same. Grief is never the same. When we talk about grief not being the same, we're going to talk about this in two dimensions. The first dimension is no two people grieve in exactly the same way. You say, well, why does that matter? Why is that important? Well, here's why this is important. Because when you grieve, and perhaps especially the first time you deal with a grief event, what I would call a grief event or a grief experience, when you go through that, inevitably, there's going to be somebody who's going to come to you and they're going to try to help you with your grief. And one of the ways they think they're going to help you is by telling you how you ought to grieve. And one of the ways they're going to try to help tell you how you ought to grieve is they're going to tell you where you should be at this stage of the journey in your grief. By now, you should be doing this. By now, you should have moved on. Which, by the way, that phrase moved on, I don't like that phrase, moved on. I don't think we ever really move on from grief. We can move forward, but to me, when I hear somebody say move on, it's like, well, you just forget about that and you get on with it. Well, that doesn't happen. And if you've experienced grief, you know that that doesn't happen. And so the reason this is important is because we have to make sure we don't allow anybody to control how we grieve. Amen. We don't allow anybody to tell us exactly how we should grieve. Let me try to illustrate this in the best way that I can. During the Christmas season in 2005, my family, my wife, Laura, and our two children were getting ready. We're packed up on a Wednesday night after church. We're packed up to drive to Birmingham, Alabama from Dallas, Texas. We're going home for Christmas to Birmingham. And we had planned to leave sometime on Thursday after the children got out of school. They didn't have to go to school on Friday. So we were going to leave on Thursday and drive to Birmingham and be there for Christmas. Sometime after midnight, my phone rang, probably around 2 o'clock in the morning. And my dad was on the other end. And my dad said, I'm sorry to have to tell you this, but your mother just passed away. We knew that my mother was not well. We knew that she had been suffering some illnesses, but we had no idea. She did what she always does. She had a tree up. She had gifts wrapped under the tree. She had made her famous desserts. Everything was ready for the whole family to come in. And she passed away 2 days before Christmas Eve. And so on Christmas Eve, we buried my mother, 2005. It was on a Saturday night. After we'd gone to the cemetery, my father said, there were four children. After the funeral, one of the children and his family had to leave to get back. They had an appointment on Sunday, and they were going to come back the next day. But my father said, I'd like to go get something to eat. Well, by the time we got back to the church building, after being at the cemetery and visited with some folks, it was about 10 o'clock at night, on Saturday night, on Christmas Eve. And my first thought was, you want to go get something to eat? Do you not realize that they brought tons of food to the house? All those ladies cooked all of that food, and it's just sitting there waiting. And I thought, what's wrong? Well, you know what was wrong? The last place he wanted to go that night at that time was to the house. He didn't want to go to the house. He didn't want to go back to that house. And so he wanted to go get something neat. So we said, okay, we piled into two or three cars. And anybody want to guess what is open on Christmas Eve at 10 o'clock at night?
Waffle House.
Can you say Waffle House? Well, we went there with about 900 other people. And we waited an hour to get seated. We waited an hour to get food. And by the time we got to my dad's house, it was midnight. My dad said, I'd like to talk to the children. We went into his bedroom. He said, I want to ask you to take this bed out of this room and bring the bed from the other room into this room. And I'd like to ask you to take all of Mom's clothes out of the closet and take all of her belongings out of the dresser and bring a different dresser in here. At that time, I didn't really understand that. But he didn't want to sleep in that bed again. They had slept together for more than 50 years. And this was going to be a time when he's going to start sleeping by himself every night. And he didn't want to do that in that bed. And so we did. I have a friend in Dallas, at Lewisville Church. His name is Brian. Brian's a deacon, been a close friend for 25 years. We've spent a lot of time together. We've talked about our story, and he said, I don't mind you sharing this about us. His mother passed away the same day my mother did in 2005. They buried his mother on Christmas Eve, just like we buried my mother on Christmas Eve. We would talk about it over the years, about how our dads were doing. My dad had remarried. He was very happy. His dad had not. He came to me about 6 years after his dad passed away. He said, I need to talk to you. We went to my office, and he said, I want to ask you to pray for me, and I want to ask you to give me some advice. We're having a family intervention, my two sisters with my dad, tomorrow. I said, what's going on? And he said, Jeff, he said, the Christmas tree that was standing on Christmas Eve when my mother passed away is still standing. There's still unopened gifts under the tree. And the coffee cup that she used the morning she died is sitting on the table next to her chair. And we don't know what to do. Our dad won't let us touch a thing. Well, I'm happy to tell you that they had this family intervention and they got him some help, and he's doing much better now. He's remarried and he's traveling and he's very happy. But here's the reason I tell you this story, and here's the question. Which one of those two men handled their grief the correct way? I hope you will say they both did. Now, they might not have handled it in the timely fashion that you think they did. One of them may have tried to rush it through, and the other one took too long. But the point is, no two people grieve in exactly the same way. And we need to let people grieve in the way that's best for them. And we need to be careful about trying to tell other people how to grieve. And the second aspect of grief never being the same is that no two personal grief experiences are the same. They're just not. My first vivid memory of loss, I don't know if it's the first, but my first vivid memory was I was about 9 years old when my grandfather passed away. My dad and my Uncle Dan's father. We went to from Birmingham, our family did, to Huntsville, and had the funeral. And at the cemetery, my dad was standing around, and I went over and stood by him. Some of the family had gone back to my grandmother's house to eat and to enjoy visiting with one another. My dad was waiting around, and I can remember this as if it happened yesterday. People would come up, and they'd hug my dad's neck, and there'd be people who would be crying, and they'd be saying some nice things that I couldn't hear or didn't fully understand. And we got back in the car, and I said to my dad, I said, "Why were all of those people crying?" And my dad said they were crying because they were sad that Pawpaw isn't going to be around anymore. And I said, didn't Pawpaw want to go to heaven? He said, "Well, of course he did." And I said, "Well, isn't Pawpaw in heaven?" And he said, "Yes, he is." And I said, "Why are all those people crying?" I couldn't wrap my mind around that. But I can wrap my mind around it now. Then my best friend died in our junior year in high school in a car wreck on the way home from football practice. Then Laura and I lost the first child in 1983. And then my mom died in 2005, and my dad died in 2010. And then Laura passed away in 2019 after 27 years of battling cancer. And I've dealt with families, hundreds of families, maybe thousands over the past 50 years who have lost loved ones. And what I've learned is that you don't feel the same way in each grief experience. And why is that important? Well, it's important because you may go through one grief experience, you may lose a parent, and then later on you may lose a child and it feels completely different. And you say, "What's wrong here? Am I losing my mind? Am I going crazy?" No, the fact is that no two grief experiences are the same. Number three, grief is not just about death. It's not just about death. In Paul's statement to the Thessalonian Christians that we read earlier, or the Corinthian Christians in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, when he says, "God is the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all of our afflictions." There are many types of afflictions. There are many types of grief. There is the grief experience of watching a loved one suffer over a long period of time. I'm thinking right now of one of my dearest friends in the world who is an elder in the church in Alabama. And his wife is suffering from something that is akin to Alzheimer's disease, and she's been dealing with it for about 5 years, and she has declined. Her health has declined, and her mind is declining, and he is watching her lose her life before his very eyes. And that's a long process. We don't know how much longer she will live. She might live another year. She might live 3 or 4 more years. She might not live another year. We just don't know. But he's taking care of her every day, and he's looking after her every day, and he's watching over her every day. And he said, "Jeff, sometimes I just break down and start crying for no apparent reason." And my thought is, number one, there are many reasons that you would do that. Because grief is not just about death. Grief can be about divorce, an unwanted divorce. It can be about separation of families when there's division in families. It can be about when a child who grew up being a faithful part of the church decides to walk away from the church. It can be about the loss of a job, about having to move far away from family. It can be about having a child who is physically or mentally disabled and knowing that you're going to give your life to raising that child to the best of your ability. It can be about some physical problem that you're dealing with in your life, a battle with cancer or a battle with heart disease or something else that's going on in your life. Grief can be about broken relationships. It can be about problems in the life of the church. There are many, many different aspects of life that can contribute to grief. And one of the problems is that if we're not careful, those of us who are grieving what we deem to be the greatest losses in life, I even have to be careful about. I don't believe in my mind and in my experience, there's no greater loss than losing the person that you're married to. Now, somebody else may say something different about that. But what we have to do is we have to make sure that we don't diminish the grief that other people are experiencing. And we need to let people grieve for whatever reason they need to grieve. There is a statistic in the field of grief that says there's something called disenfranchised grief. And disenfranchised grief is when I look at my grief and I think that my grief is more harmful and more hurtful than the grief that you're experiencing. And so I kind of put you down for that. But we need to know that grief is more than just about death. Number four, grief affects us in every dimension of our life. It affects us in every dimension of our life. When you lose somebody, when you lose the closest person in this world to you, your life will never, ever be the same again. It'll never be the same. It doesn't mean that you won't have good days in your life. It doesn't mean there won't be good times in your life. But the fact is, you'll never be the same. You may be married to somebody that you've been married to for 40 years, and you may have been extremely happy, and they may pass away, and you may grieve, and then you may find somebody else to marry. But the fact remains, your life will never be the same. It affects us emotionally. That means it affects the way that we feel. People don't understand what they're thinking, what's going through their mind. We have all of these emotions. There's the emotion of loss and the emotion of pain and the emotion of heartache. And so grief is going to affect us emotionally. It's going to affect us cognitively, the way that we think. We're going to have different types of thinking when we grieve. I had a lady call one day and she said, my husband passed away. I'd done his funeral. And she said, he always took care of our family taxes in his tax season. And he told me that he put the paperwork in a folder and I could find that folder and all I have to do is take it to the accountant. And she said, I can't find that folder. Reckon you could send some ladies and maybe they could help me look for it. So we sent some ladies over there to her house and they helped her do some straightening up and they found the folder. And one of the ladies came back and reported and she said, all I know is she must be losing her mind. She said, that folder was sitting on the kitchen table in the middle of the room on a big stack of books written in large letter taxes. It was sitting right there. I don't know how in the world she didn't see it. I'll tell you how she didn't see it. She wasn't thinking right. It affects the way we think. It affects us cognitively. It affects us. There are some people who talk about, they think that they've heard the voice of somebody who's passed away. Or they think they've seen. There's another statistic that says that 80 to 85% of the people who've lost a loved one believe they've either heard the voice of that loved one or they've seen that loved one. So it affects the way that we think. It affects the way that we behave. It affects the way that we act. So some people lose their appetite and they don't eat. Some people eat all the time. Some people can't sleep. And some people sleep all the time. It affects the way that we act. Tears come Crying comes at the most unexpected of times. My wife, Laura, was a big fan of the Eagles. That's not the Philadelphia Eagles. We're Cowboys people, sorry. But she loved the Eagles, so I would take her to Eagles concerts. And I liked the Eagles, but she loved the Eagles. As far as I know, my wife never danced a day in her life. But she came about as close as a Church of Christ preacher's wife can come to dancing at those Eagles concerts without officially being dancing. She loved the Eagles, and I tolerated it and went to the concerts with her. About 3 weeks after she had passed away, about 3 months, I was driving down I-35 in Dallas on my way to the hospital, and an Eagles song came on the radio, and it hit me the wrong way, and I just started crying. And I couldn't quit. I had to pull off the side of the interstate, get composed myself, to be able to go make that visit. It affects the way that we behave. And it can affect us spiritually. It can affect us spiritually. I've heard of people who say, I can't pray. I don't know how to pray. By the way, don't be embarrassed if you ever hear yourself say, I don't know how to pray. You know the Apostle Paul said that? In Romans chapter 8, we don't know how to pray as we should, he said. What he meant was we can't find the words. And there are times in our lives that we've been so overwhelmed and sometimes so overwhelmed with grief that we can't figure out the right words. But we don't want it to affect us spiritually. You know, I've heard of people who, if you sing a certain song and it reminds you that this was my loved one's favorite song, very difficult. I've had people say, I can't sit in the building. I feel like I'm going to have to go try to find another congregation to worship with because I just can't do it right now. And I'm thinking, well, that'd be better than just staying away altogether, wouldn't it? So it can affect us spiritually. We don't want it to affect our relationship with God to a degree that we quit talking to God altogether and we quit worshiping God and we quit being with God's people. And we'll say more about that in the worship hour. Grieving people have numerous questions. People who are grieving have numerous questions. The first and foremost question is the why question. Why? Why did this have to happen to her? Why did this happen to my wife and a friend of ours dealt with cancer for 45 years and they're doing fine? I don't understand that. Why did this happen to her and not to me? I'd rather it happen to me. We used to jokingly talk about it, Laura and I did, and I think it was her that would say, I hope that I go before you do. And I said, well, that was awfully sweet. And she says, because I don't want to have to take care of you. Because you're not an easy patient. Well, why did this have to happen now? My wife was only 59 years of age. And that seems very young to me. Seems like it's getting younger all the time, doesn't it? Why? Then there's the what question. That's a big one. What could we have done differently? And I've known some Christians who beat themselves up over this what question. What could we have done differently? What could we have tried that we didn't try? We were in contact with doctors at MD Anderson. We went to Mayo Clinic in Scottsdale, Arizona, and we had the best doctors we could have in Dallas, Texas. But we still, even at the end of her life, we said, what could we have done differently that might have failed? Then there's the how question. The how question, how can I move forward in my life and live a life that honors this person that I cared about so deeply and that glorifies God? That's the how question. And then there's the when question. When is this going to get better? When am I going to feel like moving again? When am I going to feel like living again? When will this get better? And part of the answer to that question for me is I don't know yet. It'll be 7 years in June. And there are days, if I'm being honest with you, there are days I don't want to get out of bed. There are days I don't want to see anybody. There are certainly days I don't want to preach to all those good, bad Christians. When will it get better? I think with time we learn that we can live again. We need to know that no one is going to respond perfectly to our grief. No one. Because nobody grieves the same way. Nobody's going to really understand everything there is to know about grief. So we need to give grace to people when they don't respond correctly. I'm thinking about statements that people make, you know, like, aren't you glad they're not suffering anymore? Well, yeah, but I wish they weren't suffering here. I heard people tell me, you ever heard this? Take one day at a time.
Yeah.
If you're grieving, you're thinking, one day, how about one breath at a time? How about one step at a time? 1 second. People said, guy came up to me and put his arm around me and said, you know, Brother Jeff, it could have been worse. I'm thinking, no, I don't know how. And then this was my favorite. One guy came up to me and he said, you know, your God needed another angel in heaven, so he took your wife. You guys that were here this weekend, I wanted to slap that guy in the face like my grandson. Number one, that's terrible theology. That's just wrong theology. Number two, it's not helpful. Grief is gradual. There are seasons of grief. Oh my, I'm out of time. So here's what I will do. 5 seasons of grief. Denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. Some of this is in the book, and I can't finish it all because I'm out of time. I wish we had time to talk about those 5 seasons of grief. But what I want to close with is there can be loss after life. And we can find meaning again. And we're going to talk about that in the worship hour, how we can find meaning again. When we go through some of the most painful experiences of our life. And then after, in the afternoon, we'll close our session out. Thank you for your attention. Thank you for being here. Apologize we didn't get it all in. Typically we do this in a couple of lessons, but we rush through a little bit. But thank you again for being here.